The Good, the Bad, and the Boucherian.
The Good, the Bad, and the Boucherian.
And folks, you're listening to The Good, the Bad, and the Boucherian.
Hetero men are homoerotic. You know how men are homoerotic, who have the, how they only like, they have sex with women, they desire women, but the people they love, the people they admire, the people they aspire towards are just generally men. Because now when like when it's mandatory single gender schooling, like it does a disservice to now both men and women, you know. When like men have only like male colleagues, male counterparts, male role models, male enemies, like this does no favors for their self-concept nor their consideration of the world. Like
when you talk about generational curses, you're speaking about it from a very spiritual sense, and I believe intergenerational curses are real, but not in the way that people think they are. Mm-hmm. It's not mutually roga your grandfather and your grandfather has now passed it to you. You know what I mean? Or the sense that, because there's been research that's been done over the years, and they found that you pass trauma down epigenetically.
Ooh.
So
honestly, I'm not the best one to speak upon envy, because I've seen a lot of YouTubers tackle it very, very perfectly, but I think that's part of the initial envy. Like, even it happens even among like marginalized communities, where as in like when you see even women rise through the ranks, they see other women now younger than them having it easier than them because of the strides they've made. But then they become like, man, I had to go through all this. And then you guys just coming like this. Like, I don't like that. And that's because of envy. Like, you see it in a lot of marginalized folks, in women, in LGBTQ folks, like how then they have access, as in like now in the US now, how then they can just be themselves. For the previous generation, it wasn't like that. They had to go through a lot of hardship and suffering and end up looking down upon. It causes like a lot of fracturing in within marginalized communities. So even us, the marginalized community, as Africans, that thing for, I say, unachungulia tu kuona kama boss anatoka, personally, I think it does have like a kind of a tangential relation to colonialism. Like that's how we feel, mm-hmm. the bosses, right, the exactly. white people.
Mm-hmm. At a hat run, I meet somebody from my primary school, a girl. So we talk a bit, we catch up, we move on. Just imagine there's certain people who are taking notes.
Yeah.
Who is talking to girls and who isn't talking to girls.
Oh my gosh.
Walking back to school, only we're walking back from the stadium. There's only one person who apparently hadn't talked to a single girl. I couldn't remember his name for the life of me. But it became the biggest deal. It was announced on parade that this
I... girl. Wait, what?
It's your boy Billy, and we're back at it with another episode. Hope you guys are keeping well, keeping safe amidst the pandemic, and things are going well on your side as they are on mine. And last week we promised you guys a part two, so here we are for guys who just logged in and tuned in today. I think it's best if you start with last week's episode so you can get more context on this week's episode. But again, we're back in studio with Carlo Molo and Ishmael. And they'll be telling us a continuation of what we discussed last time. We'll be talking about a lot about trauma and all of that, and how, you know, for the past generation, they try propagate this narrative that you guys are not tough enough, not hard enough. You need to go through certain things to make guys tougher. So we'll be talking about that and dissecting that even more in depth and seeing, is that right? Are we too baby? Or is it just a case of them trying to continue with traumas that ordinarily should be stopped, and a lot more into that. So hope you guys will enjoy this episode. So you guys talk to me about this. So
woo!
and we are back.
Hello.
Final more. So last time, mm-hmm. we talked about a bit about trauma, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. How trauma is harm.
And you know how guys try to rationalize and say how trauma was necessary, like how they now benefit from the trauma they experienced in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, all those things that we try and make ourselves feel better about the traumas we faced. So, but Carl, I remember you saying that trauma was harm. So I'd like you guys to elucidate more on that and what you guys think about us rationalizing trauma. Or is it us trying to look at the positive side of things because we can't change it? Or do you think there's another way we should look at trauma and not try, I'm not sure if it's glorified, or I don't know what the right one would be for what we do with our trauma.
Yeah, yeah. So, we start with that, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, I think I'll start with that. I think, yeah, trauma is harm. Trauma essentially is harm. As the same way you can get a bodily injury, like you break your leg or you break your hand or anything, it's harm. Like, it's something that's been done to you and you suffer from it. But you still keep living. That's the thing about, like, now being a human being. Regardless of anything, you still keep living until you don't. So as in, like, you find a way to work through the trauma or work around the trauma, but essentially it's still harm. And it's important that we call it harm, because when we don't, we start now looking down upon now maybe our children or people who haven't experienced this trauma. You start seeing them as like, me, I experienced this and then now I can still survive, so what's wrong with you? You forget that as in like the wrong that happened has happened to you, not to them, you know. But then, like, you start looking down upon them for not experiencing that, when it's you who has experienced trauma. It's you who's dealing with the bodily injury, you know. It's like someone who is in a cast who's now carrying a who's carrying bags, and then now he's like having a child who's not able to carry the same bags. Like, what are you doing? Like, you know, it's you. You've experienced harm. You need to call it harm so you can move forward and not spread this harm downwards, because I think that's how trauma stays in the quote-unquote bloodline. You know, you pass it down instead of like dealing with it on your own. And a big, very big part of dealing with it is like calling it by its name. It's harm that was done to you, and you need to, you know, try and heal from it. I think so. Yeah.
Is it?
So my thing about trauma is the connection to you have to your own trauma. So people tend to, I wouldn't say glamorize trauma, but they tend to see trauma in a positive light, the way Carl was saying, it's harm. But people tend to bring it in like a more positive light, like
because romanticize.
I went through this and suffered. Yeah, like you romanticize your own trauma to a point where people now make it seem as if having, okay, mental health isn't a joke, you know. It's not something we get to go on the internet and talk about like it's a fad, you know. Something bad happens to you needs to be addressed in with the correct ways and the correct channels. When you start saying, oh, this happened to me, and like, and comedy is a great way to deal with trauma, but it's really not something to share in a light way. So when we discuss our own trauma and the trauma of others, I believe we should be talking about it in a way in order to like push it into the channels that we need to discuss it, so that we can like grow out of it. It shouldn't be something you carry into late adulthood, you know. We should be able to let go of our baggage and like be free of it, I believe. And I believe that we can be. You know?
Yeah.
And to supplement that, like, humor is a great to like, as in to get through the worst of your trauma. Like, you might need humor to like get you through that, because like, you know, when you're going through it and it's really bad, humor can be the balm to your very, you know, tired soul. But we need to, at some point, we need to put the humor down and actually deal with the problem, you know, because humor can't take us the whole way. Yeah, it's what's it called? Band-aid. But you still need to remove the band-aid and deal the problem in itself. You can't just use that permanently, you know. It's helpful, but it's not the be-all, end-all.
It comes a point where we need to, like, actually talk about it without making jokes about it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, a platform such as this, where, of course, we're riffing and we're joking, but like these are very serious topics that we need to discuss over and over and over again in order to find solutions to them.
Yeah. So even with that, so Carl, you talked about looking down upon someone who hasn't experienced a trauma. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously there's a lot of that where we see people who are ahead of us, especially the generation before us,
mm-hmm.
or our parents' generation, always thinking that us as Gen Z or late millennials are too soft
mm-hmm.
and we can survive, quote unquote. So what do you guys think about that mentality where you can go somewhere and mm-hmm. something can be simple as, I remember, let me give an example for this week. So this week, I remember I'd go to my magistrate. So we're writing some judgments. So I asked her, so, you know, we're not supposed to leave court with the court files.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked her, so what time are you leaving so that we can work? So I just asked her, what time are you leaving? So for me, my rationale is I want to know what time she's leaving so we can now work around her schedule so that by the time if she says she's leaving at 1, we can return the files by 1. So another man walks in when we're having the conversation, and when we're leaving, he asked me, hey, you know, I've never had someone ask their boss what time they're leaving. And you know, in my head, I'm just wondering, we have phones, we can communicate these things. Why do you want me to go through that whole thing? But you know how, in short, you know how the generation wants you to guys to go through the hardships they mm-hmm. went through. So what do you guys think about that and how we can separate ourselves from that and live cohesively? But again, mm-hmm. understanding sometimes they're coming from a point of you guys need to know some of the hard knocks of life so you can try and get things when they get harder. Mm-hmm. And also, and again, quick yes or no question to the both of you, which you'll also answer. Do you guys believe now that, Kali talked about bloodlines, do you guys believe in generational curses? And now, mm-hmm. Ishi, now your question, now you talked about connection you have to your trauma. Do you think we can mm-hmm. ever separate ourselves from our traumas? So you see the example, how you can break your leg, you break an arm. And so, but when you break your leg or arm, in like 2 years, it's fully functional. It like never happened. So with your trauma, even though you do all therapy, shadow work, etc., can you ever be free from your trauma? Kabisa.
That's a really good question. Okay. Yeah, we'll start with the first question. That first question has a lot of dimensions to it. So especially now considering our context. So I think I'll start with now. First of all, there's something called generational envy. So as in when, basically as in envy is a very big part of our culture, even though it's really not recognized or appreciated. And honestly, I'm not the best one to speak upon envy because I've seen a lot of YouTubers circle it very, very perfectly. But I think that's part of the initial envy. Like, it happens among like marginalized communities, where as in like when you see even women rise through the ranks, they see other women now younger than them having it easier than them because of the strides they've made. But then they become like, man, I had to go through all this. And then you guys just coming like this. Like, I don't like that. And that's because of envy. Like, you see it in a lot of marginalized folks, in women, in LGBTQ folks, like how then they have access, as in like now in the US now, how then they can just be themselves. For the previous generation, it wasn't like that. They had to go through a lot of hardship and suffering and end up looking down upon. It causes like a lot of fracturing within marginalized communities. So even us, the marginalized community, as Africans, that thing for, I say, unachungulia tu kuona kama boss anatoka, personally, I think it does have like a kind of a tangential relation to colonialism. Like, that's how we treat mm-hmm. the bosses, right, the exactly. white people, you know. Okay. So as in like, mm-hmm. with the white people, we didn't have those channels of communication. So as in like, you used to see when the white man has gone, and then now you can go now, you know. So as in like, it was passed down as in now to now the Africans who took over now. And then now the other ones they looked down upon now, you know. Because now, even after independence, there was still, you know, oppression in between Africans. So as in like unakama mkubwa ametoka. So it's passed down. And then that's why you see things like that happening even to now, you know? Yeah, that's the initial envy. Like, but this thing for CG, you need to hard knocks and everything. I don't think you're putting it perfectly. Like, it shouldn't be you giving the hard knocks to the person you're trying to, you know, cultivate. You, as in the world has teeth, as in the world is a very beautiful and mysterious piece, but it also has teeth. So if you want to prepare, if you're saying you're preparing someone for the world, if you're saying you truly, truly care for someone, you want to prepare them for the world, you tell them about these things, but then you don't now cause harm to them directly. You know, explain to them that things are like this, things were like this, and you need to be prepared for this. And I'm really sorry this might happen to you. And you try and find ways to like help them through that. But like when you impose now those teeth, those traumas yourself, I don't think you're doing the help you think you're doing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Nice. Next question was
generational curses.
Ishmael, you can handle that.
When you talk about generational curses, you're speaking about it from a very spiritual sense, and I believe intergenerational curses are real, but not in the way that people think they are.
Mm-hmm.
It's not mutually roga your grandfather and your grandfather has now passed it to you. You know what I mean? Or the sense that, because there's been research that's been done over the years, and they found that you pass trauma down epigenetically.
Ooh,
so
yeah.
The more personal stress
you have,
you pass it to your offspring. So you find in marginalized communities, like people who have undergone stress for generations and generations and generations, they have higher risk of a lot of diseases. Black people mm-hmm. have higher risk, Africans have higher risk for obesity, higher risk for diabetes, higher risk for hypertension, higher risk for cardiac events, you know, like these stresses that people have been passing down to their children and their children and their children are manifesting in DNA as physical disorders, you know?
Oh. Yeah.
So as we talk about intergenerational curses, we should be speaking about what generation is going to break the so-called curse.
Mm.
Will it be me that lives freely, that this thing that I have in my DNA, that my great-great-grandfather was tested by a white person, and now, you know, I'm probably going to develop diabetes in the future? It's a very strange disconnect between the generations as well, because this isn't something, especially men, this isn't something we discuss, you know. We don't say, my father treated me like this, my father treated me like this, and so my father treated me like this, and so I'm treating my son like this. It's not something that's widely discussed.
Yeah.
Or it's not as discussed as I personally would like it to be. Because if I could speak to one of my living, like the oldest male in my family, if I could speak to them on like a here-to-here level, like if we could level with each other, and have a conversation about the things in our family that we could, you know, unintentionally pass on to the next generation, I feel like we could be able to break that cycle almost instantaneously, you know? Because mm-hmm. then you'd be aware of
mm-hmm.
how these, you know, how the generational curse has manifested. And so maybe you could be like, conscious of it, like more conscious of it, and able to, like, you know, step back and say, am I re-traumatizing my family, you know?
Yeah.
Am I adding to the so-called curse?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would really like to, like, now I really highlight something that you said, as in, like, the awareness is the really important part of it. As in, like, awareness is a really, it's awareness, a first step, but it's a very big first step. And even, I think I would like to remind us of, like, some quotes from last time, because it's really, as in, trauma in a person decontextualized over time can look like personality. Trauma in a family decontextualized over time can look like family traits. Trauma in a people decontextualized over time can look like culture, you know, as in, that really, 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 really demystifies all that for me. Because, like,
It
really helps. Because now, with the awareness, you have now decontextualized all that, you know? Mm-hmm. You help contextualize, contextualize, yeah. So, just supplement, yeah. Continue.
Oh, right. I was also talking about...
uh-huh.
I was also talking about, you know, early childhood development. You know how they say nature and nurture make up a person?
Yeah.
So... most people tend to blame things on their nature. And mm-hmm. you need to ask yourself where your nature comes from.
Mm-hmm.
It's key. Because if you can say, I'm like this because of this, you can start to break things down to the base level, to the tiniest molecule of why you are the way that you are. And if you're talking about this in the context of masculinity, you end up getting the strange, the way we talked about before, the boys will be boys notion, that violence is ingrained, that aggression is someone's nature. But you need to ask yourself, where does that aggression come from?
Yeah.
Is it my nurturing? Is it my genetics? Is it something that I've received from another generation of my family? Is it something that I'm going to give the next? Because the way they say, a single person can change the course of history. So if you're able to look at yourself and self-actualize and become a better person, then you could, you know, even if it sounds corny, you're able to change the world as the single person that you are.
Mm-hmm.
And that starts from childhood. That starts from how we socialize our boys, how we treat our children.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
So even with that, do you still have to answer my question on
trauma and
connections you have to go on trauma? Even as well, that's how you can prep for another kind of question. You see how Isha's been talking about trauma and having to be aware and all that. But again, you know how for a lot of people, you make trauma your whole personality. So I was watching a video where someone was saying, sometimes people really don't want to get better, like if suffering from a mental illness or something or trauma, because you've learned to live with it and now it's part of who you are. So, like, for mm-hmm. example, the person is someone who's depressed. Mm-hmm. So this person has learned to live with it, and depression is part of them. Ooh. And so they're afraid of going to therapy or to work on it because they don't know who they'll be
without this depression.
You know, yeah. like, who yeah. am I really? And a lot of people are scared of that question. That's why a lot of us don't question our beliefs or religion. We don't question, mm-hmm. you know, because mm-hmm. who are we
without that? Yeah,
you know? I get that. What do you think about that? So is she back mm-hmm. to connection as culprit for that? So do you think
so,
we can... Uh-huh, go ahead.
Sorry. What they say is that, you know, our minds are built on connection. The entire human experience is built on connection. But trauma is a faulty connection, a break in the connection. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So... basically, okay, let me backtrack that first. So the reason that we have trauma is in order for our brains to protect us from terrible things happening in our lives. So when you have that break in connection between you and your own mind, that's now what trauma is. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's a break in connection to yourself, to your body, to your surroundings, to your spirit, if I can say. Does that make sense? To your community. And as soon as you're, again, back to the awareness, as soon as you're aware of that break in the connection, you can now start healing. You can now go into now the process of healing. You can reduce, you can do those things that therapists say, reduce your stress, build your resilience, you know, which is fine. You can even, you know, seek drug therapy. But I think the most important thing, the base where it starts, is just addressing it, saying this happened and I feel this way about it. And then you can now start reaching out to whoever it is that is around you and saying, I'm feeling this way, because that's what, you know, friends and family are for, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But when the toughest of times are coming and, you know, often enough, you can feel them coming, you can be able to say, let me take a step back from this thing that's happening. Let me address it and let me do what I need to do to get through it or to get over this specific hurdle. Because as soon as that break in connection happens, it can break every other connection. You can be completely disconnected from your own mind, you know, from your own body, from your own spirit. Just like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's the addressing it that begins the healing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ah. Okay. So even Karen, as you answer your question,
mm-hmm.
I'll ask Ishi to also prepare another question for the question I wanted to ask him on. You remember earlier we talked about preparing them for the world. So Carl talked about just telling them and, you know, not inflicting the harm. So do you feel like just the telling creates that awareness that they want to achieve? But also, even as you answer that, obviously, because we also have this, you'll take me a deep dive into going to boarding schools, because I know that's one of the things you're told, let me take you to boarding school so you can be a man, you can be tough, you know, all that hulabaloo.
Mm-hmm.
I was having a conversation with someone the other day, and you know, I commute sometimes from home. So the person was telling me, you know, you need to leave the hostels, and you know, enjoy campus life, you know, you need to be stolen from, whatnot. So just bro. So you guys will tell me this preparing for the world and how you guys were. Do you think again that boarding prepared you guys for the world? Or do you think it caused now this trauma we're talking about more than so it did cause more harm than the good they supposedly wanted it to cause?
Mm-hmm.
Or would you do it again? Would you make your children go through it and you're like, okay, I experienced that, but I feel like it made me who I am today. And so, yeah, 100% recommend. So, yeah, but Carl, tell us about trauma and
trauma and how we and personality. It's very difficult to, you know, see that part of your trauma from your own personality, because this is, as in something like depression, it can become, it's this very huge thing which really weighs down upon you, which really dominates your waking hours, which really needs you. So as in like when you're trying to heal from it, as in like you wonder like what's next for me, like I've been this for so long, as in anything else, you know. But I think that there's this Japanese art called kintsugi, where when bowls break or when plates break, they repair the plate with now gold. So as in, when the plate is back whole, it has now streaks of gold in now the cracks where the cracks used to be. So the plate as a whole becomes a whole new thing, which shows now its journey through the breaking, and now it's transformed into a new thing. Now it becomes a transformative like breaking, as in like, yes, it broke, but now it's this new, better thing, you know. As in like, we always remember that, as in the struggle is not all there is. The struggle against depression, the struggle against anxiety, the struggle against this and this and this and that, it's not the whole picture. We're just on the journey there. And we need to always remind ourselves that the end product, where we are after, will be much better than where we are now. Because, you know, depression is, it hurts you, it makes you a bad friend. It's as in, it's not even on your own volition. You just have no time for friends when you're really trying to, you know, survive, basically. So we should always remember that, as in, the end, the journey is important, but the end product, we're going to be much better than, but the journey builds us to that, you know. The kintsugi, the gold, the end will become a golden six feet. And I think that's a good metaphor to take us through. Like, we don't have to treat a person to this struggle, to this thing which has broken us like this. In the end, we will be better, because we build back. We become better than we are and tomorrow. So I think that really helps you. You know, it's a good founding myth, basically.
Yeah. And with that, do you think that our friends as well transform and evolve with us? Because we've seen, obviously, people saying how your friends will always refer you to the old you, the you who they were used to being. Now that we're using depressed, we can just use it. The old you was depressed and they don't want to accept the new you. So are those genuine friends who probably don't understand what's happening? Or are those friends you shouldn't keep, who want to refer to the old you and probably sometimes even make you feel bad about who you once were? And then again, with that, once you've reached the journey with your golden streak, is it something that you can be proud of really and say, yeah, I've gone through this, it was part of me then, but I don't say identify by that, but like it's not who I am anymore? Or is it something that when we've come out of that shell, we hide and be like, okay, so this is the new me, and moving forward, no one has to know about the me that was.
Okay. Those are two questions. So regarding the friends, I think friends are people who genuinely do want the best for us, because both the easiest and hardest part about friendship is that it's voluntary. You're only there because you want to be there, you know, and it comes from both sides. That's why it's so difficult and yet so easy, you know. So friends really, they do have to want the best for us. So as in, when it's friends who can't accept the you who's better, who's happier, who's really, who's not miserable, then I don't think those are friends you want to have. Those friends will keep you in a place where you're miserable, and you can't be miserable. As in, suffering is, I don't know, I don't think you should choose suffering because of your friends. Suffering should be transformative, or it's unnecessary completely, and you should avoid it. When you're depressed and you're going through it, you're miserable, you can't do anything. As in, it really impairs you from being the best you who you can be, you know. So like, well, if it comes to the point where you'll have to make new friends post depression, then I guess it's a bit too, because as in, this is a new you, this is someone who, this is now you are post depression. Depression really affects you in very many adverse ways, as the doctor can even tell us. It really prevents us from, It really impairs every moment of our working lives. It affects our sleep. It affects our waking hours. It's your really emotion. your emotions. It's just not a good place to be.
Your depression affects not just like your emotional well-being, but also your physical well-being. You're not able to digest food. You're not able to, you know, walk. Sometimes some people, when they're in that depression fit, they're unable to hear, they're unable to see. It's a very dark
place to be in.
You know?
Yeah. So, and like friends, true friends always want the best for us. So as in, like, I think the friends who are friends to us, they will stick by us throughout everything. They'll stick by us by our depressing episode, they'll stick by us when we're happy again. And I think those are the friends who you should keep. To your second question, should we hide the things we've gone through? I don't think so. As in, like, even now, the kintsugi metaphor I've used, like, the gold streaks, it's still the cracks which are there. It shows where the cracks were, you know? Like, where you've broken is what it really shows. Even though it's gold streak now, it shows your journey is still there, you know? So as in, it's not something we should really have to hide about ourselves. Like, we can choose to hide, but I don't think that really helps us in the long run. Like, this is something... Yeah, it's something that, as in, like, it happened to us and we should just be honest about it. And, like, it also helps us, like, if someone looks up to us and they're suffering from the same thing, and then it would really be a help to them as well to know that, as in, like, in you, they have someone who went through it and got on the other side, okay. Even in our friends who have been depressed, like, oh my gosh, you know, Carl was depressed, like, Carl is, he's my boy. Like, if he can make it, then I too can also make it. He can also help me to get through it. Like, since he understands what really this involves, you know, he can really, like, be with me through this. As in, like, I can take time from him. I can talk to him. Like, even random strangers who weren't really friends with us, but then now they know this thing about us. So as in, they feel a sense of kismet, a sense of, like, brotherhood in that, because again, yeah, it's very hard. Yeah, exactly. So I don't think it's something we should hide. It's if it's something that we've managed to through over, I think it's something we should be proud of. It's a gold streak to our broken bowl. So yeah, that's what I think. Yes.
So Ishi, now as you take us to Chikoles, just one last region. Do you think that the world we live in appreciates that vulnerability and honesty? So if Billy came out and said Billy is depressed, will you guys appreciate it, or will you guys, like, outwardly appreciate it? Like, yeah, he's strong, but deep down you're saying, "Hey, whom say?" You know, undertones. You're not with Billy. You're talking to your friends, and you're just like, "Hey, do you hear about Billy? What not?" You know, all those things. So, do you think the world genuinely appreciates such things, or like when I'm coming to ask for a job from either of you, you will be like, "Hey, you remember when Billy is not too strong, so let's sideline him for this job because he's not So do you guys think that the world appreciates that vulnerability?
Okay. That's a good question. I think I'll take half of it. She also wants to take half of it. Okay, you first. Yeah, you first.
Oh, so, no, just go ahead.
Okay, fine. I'll tackle it from now, as in like, okay, from my end. Personally, I will appreciate, as in like, depression is a big deal. Depression is a very big deal. And like the people who like, will be like that, will be like, he can't handle, as in like, they haven't gone through whatever depression is. And like, I don't think we should be really worrying about them because as in, it comes from a point of ignorance, and ignorance shows ugly heads in very many ways. It can show it in that way. So personally, I think that anyone who's gone through depression, anyone who knows about depression in an intimate way, like the doctors and everything, the people who've like actually studied about it, the people who've actually gone through it, then can appreciate that as like not as something to be ashamed about. Because I think as in like this point of like seeing it as like a bad thing, as in like as something to like badmouth Billy about, like that comes from now this now very fragile form of masculinity, this fragile masculinity which needs to get a hand eye high on someone, like you only as in like bring this up as a jab when like you're trying to, you know, look better in someone, as in like he's like that but me not like that, so as in like I'm better, you don't see that part in me, but like in the framing it like that when you're being did you hear about me, it's trying to get a leg up on someone, you know. So yeah. Personally, like I, in my view, I don't think that's something to be ashamed of. Kabisa. Like society and everything. We do make up society, and yet we complain about society. And that's true. Like that people who will react like that, that people who are ignorant in that way, who will now be funny. But it's important to know that they're wrong. And it comes from a point of ignorance or just malice. And I don't think we shouldn't focus on them, you know. Like, they can try learn. They can try gain more knowledge or not. I don't know that. Ishmael.
Mm-hmm. So even Ishmael, as you answer, I'll just give you one last tangent on that question.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't mean that. The last question,
No problem.
Even with that... Because Kali said we shouldn't be worrying about that, the people who don't appreciate it. But why is it that, again, we focus on... So let's say the 10 people support me. Mm-hmm. Then Ishi becomes the one person who doesn't support me.
Mm-hmm. And
says something negative. Why is it that I'll focus? Ishi's comment...
Oh, right.
Or, you know, yeah. As you answered, vulnerability, and why is it that we worry about the one person we shouldn't be worrying about?
So it's a funny thing to talk about vulnerability because it's not exactly something that's been cultivated in our culture. When, you know those TikToks that girls make when they're like, me when I come to my male friends with a problem and they immediately bombard me with solutions. So oftentimes than not, they want you to sit with them even if it's in silence. And just be there for that person. And it's really, and I think that's the thing that we're missing in our culture. Just being able to sit with each other, even in silence, and drink water of all things, and just not talk, and just be there for each other. And I think that's key. Being there for your friend, being there for your brother, being there for your father, being there for your mother, your friend, if you can be there for someone even in the worst of their times, I believe that's the only way that we can overcome this dark, you know, this dark period it seems that we are in.
Mm-hmm.
Even when they say that every interaction you have with someone makes a deposit in their memory bank. So whether or not you'll remember something isn't really important. It's just about whether or not you've made a good impression on this on the other person in this interaction. And on the other side of that, question about the sorry, I'm losing the words. Sharing is key. So if everyone, okay, not everyone, but if people can come together and share their experiences, I feel like nobody would feel as alone as we do, because everyone feels funny at some point. Everyone gets that loud noise in their head that makes you feel like you're trapped in, like your head is underwater, you know, like you're drowning. Everybody feels like that at some point. And if we're able to share that feeling when we feel it and come together and, you know, experience it together and share our own experiences together, I feel like that would be now the route towards all of us kind of finding peace.
Mm. Now, take me to Triple S.
Yeah.
Before I go to Triple S, before I go to Triple S.
Yeah.
Okay. I was wondering about the Wi-Fi. Anyway, go to Triple S. I had to add that now, like, when in our relationship with now our brothers, with our niece, because as in like males do react in a stereotypically male way. So as in like they tend not to even like now, even the question itself, like now when a girl goes to her male friend and they bombard with solutions, like it's in the indicative of like, you know, a clash between how men and women perceive things. So as in like with women, there's this overt, you know, empathy, overt affection, overt all these things, you know, how they are with each other, like this loving way they regard one another, the way they treat one another, and it's good for them. And males typically aren't like this. So I think personally now the healthy version of now that in males is like validation. Like now in your worst time, then you go to your male friend, then as in like he really gets, as in like, oh my gosh, that really, as in, that sucks, man. You know, like that sucks, man, it hits in some way. Like, or like this thing I've seen in football where, as in like, after a player scores a goal or like a player makes a good save, the other player swamped him and then now chest bumped him or something, or like something like that, you know, like we've seen in games, like now that's validation they have between each other. That's now healthy, like masculinity. That's how, as in like validation, that's where, as in guys want to hear I love you, want to hear I'm proud of you, you know, like that's the stereotypically like male version of the thing. So as in it's important that, you know, we regard this as well, we incorporate it into our circles, I guess. Yes. Now you can go to Sunshine.
Triple S kuna nini? That's the question. What about Triple S?
Prepare you for, you know how guys tell you will prepare you for the real world, whatever the real world is. So do you feel like it achieved that? Do you feel like it caused more good than this half trauma? Yeah. And would you, you know, recommend, would you ever take your child to boarding? Or do you think it's a, like, ideally, it should be a good concept, but for ground is what the issue is. So, yeah.
I think it was a good concept at the time. Like, in the early years, of our country. Yeah, sure, because people were accessing education from very remote areas. So, like, people going to, you know, essentially live at school was a good idea at the time. But now we've carried it into the modern age, you know? Mm-hmm. And we're having the same outdated methods of discipline, let me tell you. Because, no, our principal, you know, the late Kiptum, when he came to Sunshine, he implemented all the nonsense you people had at Alliance. He tried to bring it to the Langata Road. And let me tell you, those, because we, the people who came in 2015, were the last people to experience that era of Sunshine. So let me tell you, in Form 1 niliteswa, like, I've never experienced that type of hardship in my life. Because, you know, I'm not a complainer. I'm not a pusher. So when they told me won an ADH duty, I said, sour, I'll go and I'll just clean some tables. It won't be a big deal. Me, I'm being surprised they're telling us, mop this whole, I mean, you know, clean every table, clean every chair, remove all the tables from the chair, and then, you know, arrange this hall for Sunday service in the next 30 seconds. And the prefect starts counting down, 30. And then he jumps to 10, 10, 9, 8, kill him to chini. And now we have to frog jump. As he's throwing shoes at us. Let me tell you, that was the worst year of my life. I've never recovered by that, let me tell you. But the reality is, and I don't know if this is just me glamorizing it, now I have a very high threshold for suffering, you know? Nothing is that bad. Nothing is really that bad. Nothing is as bad as having for was pouring hot tea on you, you know?
No way.
Nothing is that bad. You know? Because I know, let me tell you, dining hall duty was some of the worst. Wow. Like, you're trying to clean a table from first start pouring the plates on the table after you've just cleaned. Jesus.
I shouldn't be laughing. But what?
I think about it so much. You know, sometimes I have dreams about it. Sometimes I'll
cleaning
and then I'm wearing my blazer and I'm
wondering, I get.
How did I get back here? And how did I escape it also?
Because
Then I reached Form 4 and then I became a prefect, a captain. And it was so mentally, I don't know, it was such a
jarring.
It was jarring. So mentally jarring to have been oppressed and then to be wearing the clothes of my oppressor.
Mm-hmm.
It was really weird.
Mm-hmm.
But then now, at the same time, I never benefited from being a prefect. I never got extra food. I never cut the line, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it was just, all of it was for nothing, I guess. All the suffering was for nothing.
That's the thing. Honestly, like, Amy, in my opinion, like, I don't think, like, okay, the way we do boarding schools, I don't know, like, okay. Personally, what we wanted to add to the conversation is that I think they should be mixed. I do think they should be mixed because now
this is back to our gender separation
conversation. Exactly. This ties to how hetero men are homoerotic, you know, how men are homoerotic, how they only, like, they have sex with women, they desire women, but the people they love, the people they admire, the people they aspire towards are just generally men. Because now when it's mandatory single gender schooling, like, it does a disservice to now both men and women, you know. When, like, men have only, like, male colleagues, male counterparts, male role models, male enemies, like, this does no favors for their self-concept, nor their conceptualization of the world. Like, this applies to women too, but I'll speak on what I know, you know. So, as in, like, in school, like, you're only interacting with now, like, men, niggas. So, as in, like, you only have male friends, only your male friend can teach you to do some math problem. Only your male friend, you can see, like, being number one, being knowing all these things, like being the smartest person, your upperclassmen that you aspire to be, towards, they're all men, you know. Like, and that's, like, now this arbitrary thing that you say, as in, like, now they're all men since you're only in contact with now the men. So it's a school you don't have peers who are now women, enough as in, like, roommates who are women. So now formative experiences like that, which are important, arguing against each other, learning with each other, teaching each other, being grateful in defeat, in victory, these are important milestone experiences. And so when we separate our children along the line of as arbitrary as sex, we rob them of these opportunities to become fully rounded human beings. As in, so many people fall through the cracks. Like, I don't know. I think, as in, it does help you. Like, not much, but, like, it does help you add perspective. Like, seeing, you know, both men and women, like, above you and below you. And honestly, I think it would have helped the suffering part. Because, honestly, some of the shit we went through was just because
People were performing masculinity.
Performing. It's crazy.
That is some of the things I used to hate about high school. Mm-hmm. People used to fight for no reason. Like, okay. Now we're fighting. Okay. And it's like a character in like a comprehension or something. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And people would just fight. The aggression was untamed, you know?
People used to fight before breakfast. Before breakfast.
You're being fueled by nothing but hate. It's 5
literally.
It's 5 a.m.
You think we're just treated as a joke, but it's actually very literal.
That thing was literal. Like, there's no way. Like, kila mtu kwa daro amelala. Why are you fighting? Why are you fighting?
Honestly, like, yes, it was trauma, but like, it was really funny. Like,
but also
experiencing all that.
You talk about it with peers, but it was also experience between male teachers. You know,
mm-hmm.
Because male teachers were like overly aggressive with us as well.
Oh yeah,
like unapigwa hadi, your life is changing before your eyes. Like, you can see this is a this is a core memory that I'll keep.
Uh-huh. Don't take me back. Do not take me back. Because you said the thing about like dreaming about high school. Those are the worst nightmares. Genuinely, I'd rather be chased.
Every time I'm in a room and like, for example, when I was in Kwetu and then Stima goes, you know, I still flinch.
Why?
Dictionary Tanigonga or something, you know.
Oh, damn.
Woo! I just, you know.
Damn.
Vilekano, she soft left bush.
Oh, soft life? What do you mean, soft life?
Is she asking about the body bush trauma he experienced?
Yes, I mean, yeah, a bit.
Ngoja. I mean, Lishi soft life, according to who?
Pole, into the microphone.
For real, like, for real.
Yeah, I'm shocked. Too stunned to speak.
Oh. I'm actually shocked, for real.
Ulimwagiliwa chai.
I'm just like, hey, compared to Ishi, Izo Zakeni crazy. Izo Zakeni is genuinely the worst thing I've ever heard about. I cannot compare at all. No. Iyo ilikuwa mateso. Ishi, you should seek financial compensation. Hapo Z.
I want to ask for it every day. I just don't want to, you know, cause a scandal. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You need to go there. You need to go there for real and ask for your money.
Bad. You know, every day there was something. You know?
You think you're the frying pan till you hear someone who's in the fire.
Still, you hear someone talking about the fire. For real. Anyway.
We've agreed colorizations of life, but
honestly, you brought up a very good important point. Like, you know, all that, like how as in like a big part, okay, it's called homosexual bonding, how men relate to one another, like outside of like sexual, as in like now when men are relating to men. So as in like this is the platonic sexual relationship among people of the same gender, like now men. And this is where people develop their ideas about masculinity and feel accepted into now manhood. And a big part of this homosexual bonding is heterosexuality and being able to prove heterosexuality. Now, all this halabaloo that people cause when a girl walks by or whatever, as in you perform it so much and you're performing it for your friends, you're performing it, you wouldn't do this when you are on your own. You're doing it because you're in a group. You know, exactly. Like, as in, the point is because you're in a group, you're performing something for your friends to see, you know. So, as in, like, a lot of this social bonding involves women, talking about women, picking up women, talking about your sexual pursuits and exploits. So, when you're not attracted to women, or when you can't talk to women, or you're not having a lot of sexual pursuits, you can't really contribute much to the conversation. Like, what one don't get about there, whatever, and you're just there, silent. You know, how will they contribute me? Huna maoni, basically. So, as a result, you end up being seen as less by your peers. Like, now, it's as in, like, you, not only are you not getting women, also your guy friends are seeing you as, like, ay, wait, who say? You shouldn't be hanging out with me, who nanny? We used to call them breezers in Alliance, yeah?
Yeah, that's cool.
Exactly. So, as in, you not only suffer from now being isolated from girls, you also suffer from being isolated from your friends. So, as in, how can you prove your manhood?
That's really past a lot of nonsense.
A lot. As in, Alliance School is responsible for 90% of the crimes in Kenya.
90% of the hate crimes in
Kenya. No, I'm talking about even corruption. Uko Jew by those. Anyway, I shan't name names. I care about my life and my soft life. Because anyway.
There was this guy in our high school. The first function we ever went for was Mata.
Mm.
We go for Mata Hatran. Oh God, nonsense. We go for Mata Hatran, and then, you know, everybody's talking about Ukenda Posi Breeze. So me, I'm like, I don't know what breezing is, but I'll just go for Mata Hatran. I'll buy like 2 smokies. I'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
So, Mata Hatran, I meet somebody from my primary school, a girl. So we talk a bit, we catch up, we move on. Just imagine there's certain people who are taking notes.
Yeah.
Who is talking to girls and who isn't talking to girls.
Oh, and my gosh.
Walking back to school, only we're walking back from the stadium. There's only one person who apparently hadn't talked to a single girl. I couldn't remember his name for the life of me. But it became the biggest deal. It was announced on parade that this
girl. Wait, what?
As in, like, what was the matter? What was the matter?
He should let you know.
So it came on parade and said, this guy did not talk to a single girl. You know?
Anyway, as in, that's a very good explanation for what I'm talking about. As in, yes, as in, not only are you not talking to girls, but also you're facing shame, you're facing ridicule from your own peers. Like, in a cool, I still need to be biased. So, as in, now, how to move forward, because also, as in, like, even in the reverse sense, as in, like, some people just date like attractive women who they don't really like, who they don't really relate to, just for the, you know, so I pull as in talk to them, pull as in change your social class. You suddenly, you're, you know, the person in the story, the group leader, just because, the girl that you're dating is particularly attractive. You don't really care about her as the girl, you care about the social capital she gives you. Yeah. So it's really clear to see, as in, like, this view of women, this how you, as in, like, we've come to perceive women, that's harmful to them as well as you, because you're seeing them as an object, like as a prize, but still as an object. So, as in, moving forward, centering from this basing masculinity on heterosexuality, this basing masculinity on, you know, on women, you need to be centered that there's more to being a man than being attracted to women, basically. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Remember, Ishi last time talked about adulthood and how it's hard to have the interpersonal relationships due to the single gender schools. So, right. Mkwana mwani on that.
Sorry?
Ishmael.
So, you know, what I said last time was basically the disconnect between the genders. Like, you know, the boys are from Jupiter and girls are from Mars storyline that we've perpetuated over the generation.
Venus.
Up on the cup a bit. Basically, it's that disconnect between the sexes that seems to have been perpetuated over the generations. Boys are dogs, girls are cats, you know?
Oh.
So it's a very strange thing that we've perpetuated, but specifically in the context of, you know, where we live in Nairobi, one of the, you know, defining factors that contributes to the disconnect is the separation of the sexes in our formative years, in teenage years. Because you realize that when girls and boys meet, it's very awkward, you know? At least at the time. So people don't know how to talk to girls. And apparently on girls' end, girls do not talk to boys, which is a strange thing to, you know, to have had for the first time when I entered university. So the only way I believe we can bridge the gap is through, you know, conversation. If people were open and honest about their feelings towards certain things, even with the opposite gender, because people, you know, perform for the opposite gender as well. As much as we perform for each other, we perform for women as well. Women perform for men as well. So if we can be open and honest without the performance, it would go a long way in bridging the gap.
So when guys, again, talk about, you know, like, you've seen this video saying, like, telling girls, tap into your femininity, men love that, or, like, men tap into your masculinity, and, like, last time you guys told me, like, how gender is a spectrum. So what does this mean into your femininity or into your masculinity?
Me, personally. Uh-huh.
Oh. Just try something and see if you like it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Easy stories are at the when a man is masculine enough, you wouldn't have to tap into your, as in all the things, all the people talk about is you at the tapping into your femininity, tapping into your masculinity, as in, like, just do what works for you. Just do what works for you. Is affirming and empowering to you. Like, you know, like for again, like I said, there's gender affirming things and gender, you know, denial things. So as in, like, for example, working out is gender affirming to different people, you know, as in, or wearing a suit can be gender affirming to you. Like, as a guy can be affirming to you, as a girl can be affirming to you. So do what just feels, what you gravitate towards. Yeah,
you know.
Interesting. So even now, as we wind up, I have two questions. So earlier on, talked about territorial envy, and Carl talked about giving an example of women, right? So just this a quick question. We're not going to even discuss it later. Maybe you guys will give me another day to discuss it later about feminism. So in your opinion, guys, do you guys think that feminism works for the black woman, or is feminism more for the white woman, and the white woman benefits the most out of feminism, but the black woman who makes the most noise? Because you had the whole argument of black African women probably are the lowest in that hierarchy of, you know, feminism works for the women. That's one question. Because I know if you delve deep into that, we get another episode. So that will just give me your 2 cents in a few sentences. And then the other question is drug therapy, right? Do you guys believe in drug therapy?
Yeah.
Do you believe that it is addictive? Do you believe that once you start it, you can't stop? And so you don't become addicted to it for life? Or do you think it's actually helpful in the manner that can, like any other drug, you can take it for a couple of months, years, and then you can be win off it and lead a normal life? So, yeah.
Okay. So, I guess.
Not to handle this one.
Yeah, I guess, I'll leave the drug and, you know, the medical things to you. So, feminism. There's not, okay. Again, if we really delve into this, we'll be here all night, basically.
Yeah.
But there have been multiple waves of feminism. First wave, second wave, third wave.
Yeah.
And generally, like, yes, it's very important to note that, like, when white women who were fighting for their rights, they particularly paid mind to exclude the black women who are weeding their children, who are working for them, in their homes. So it's important to note that the origin, when they were fighting for it, they particularly took mind to exclude the Black woman. So I think feminism, it would need to be intersectional. Intersectional feminism is what now champions now everyone, which now circumvents now the whole group, of women. Yeah. But I would suggest, as in, like, we also bring, you know, an expert on feminism to supplement our discussion there, because I don't think it would make sense for, you know, three guys to talk about feminism, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm. An issue?
So on drug therapy, it's really important to note that drugs alter your entire body chemistry. So in my opinion, I don't think everyone should be on medication. If medication is the logical next step after, you know, psychotherapy and counseling and every other, because, okay, specifically in Kenya, it takes a lot for you to be put on a pill. It takes a lot of debate and a lot of conversation for you to be put on medication. But some mental illnesses, you know, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, they need medication to be managed, because without medication, you know, it goes a bit wild, you know? People have paranoid delusions, people have delirium, people have, you know, what are they called? Those, like, really, really vivid hallucinations. People think they live in World War II, you know? So some of mental illnesses, medication is really important in their management. But some others, I think we need to be very cautious before we put someone on medication, because the side effects are also crazy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Antidepressants cause severe weight gain, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they could also lead to kidney injury. They could lead to liver failure, gastritis, you know? So it's really important to be very cautious with medication, always. Any type of medication, not just, you know, medication for mental illness, even antibiotics, even painkillers. Just be very, very cautious with what you put into your body.
That makes sense. Yeah, I think, guys, let's wrap up another bang episode, because I have several questions that I don't ask to go for another 1.5 hours. To answer, that's you two should have a podcast. I think, and I'm serious. Don't say then you guys leave it there.
Genuinely,
not them for holiday.
Honestly,
release one episode a month. One episode every fortnight, but no pressure.
Sour. We will discuss tips as our, you know, as the trailblazer. Jesus.
Say less.
Yeah.
Tell us what you guys loved about this, another very interesting episode and all the things we've talked about. Have a lovely week ahead, folks, and cheers.